Welcome to Juice Podcast. I'm Emily Harmon, and I'm joined today at Kids Adormitio with Antonio Monteiro. Hi, Antonio.
Hi.
Welcome to the podcast.
Good morning. Pleased to meet you. Welcome to Kids Adormitio.
Yeah, I'm so happy to be here. With my import business, Sublime Wine, we have been working with Antonio's Vigni Verde. We shipped last year the first pallet. So 2020, we started working with your Vigni Verde, which is really exciting. I'd love to let our listeners know a little bit more about Quinta do Erbizio.
Quinta do Erbizio.
You pronounce it very well. So, Quinta do
Erbizio.
Erbizio. So, I use the Z as an S when I pronounce it.
Yes, the Z can be used as an S. A strong S.
Erbizio. Okay.
So this is a small farm that it's in our family for several generations. I still have pictures of my grandmother, and so that we are now trying to develop a project with bottling and exporting wine, particularly Vigno Verde. And so this is quite a recent activity of mine, because before I was professor to University of Lisbon, professor of horticulture, research projects, students, traveling a lot. And since 6 years ago, I'm devoted to this project, trying to improve the quality of the wines, to export, develop new labels. And this is quite a complex job. Because I used to say to my colleagues at university that selling a bottle of wine is much difficult than writing a scientific paper.
Why is that? Because you've got more bottles to sell.
No, because it's not just the matter. It's that the wine world is so competitive.
And it's so subjective as well, right?
And there are so many wines, wines, not only in Portugal, but when you go abroad, you have, I would say, almost all countries producing wine, from China to the United States, Australia, Europe. So how can we convince somebody to buy our wines?
Well, and usually, give them a taste of it.
I tell our potential customers is these wines are different. If you want to try something different, okay, come to Quinta do Erbizio.
So, Antonio, we spent some time going through the vineyards and in the cellar earlier on today, and you mentioned to me that the property's been in the family for some time.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
I have pictures, at least from my grandmother, and then my great grandmother, and with my grandmother, I used when as a child to come here to visit the farm, she was very careful looking at everything, because in those days the farm was rented, but she would come here quite often, and so it's something that I feel part of our family, for part of myself, and I want to keep. In good condition, although in a different style, because in those days we did not bottle wine, and this was for local market. And so this is now a different project that we will want to continue.
When did you first start bottling wine? At Quinta do Erbizio.
Yes, this was my father. My father first bottled the first wine in the 1980s.
Okay.
And this still we can taste one bottle from 1902.
Wow.
1992.
Okay.
I still have two or three bottles, and
it's
still drinkable.
Nice. So you have a little little cellar reserve library.
Yes, we keep always a few bottles from every vintage. This is something that we do for the last 30 years. And surprisingly, we noticed that Vinho Verde could age very well. Because for most of the people, Vinho Verde is something that you have to drink within 1 year. But our wines, they are made in a way that they can age. They change because it's not young wine with fruit and so on. But they are still very pleasant, as you had the occasion
to try many bottles.
Yes. At least we tried the 14 and yes. The 2008.
Yes.
And they are interesting wines to drink.
They're drinking very nicely. I think that's the point. We had this discussion earlier, which I think is really interesting for our listeners, is the fact that the wines from this region often, like the success of the region also can be something that can hold it back in a way, like because it's so famous for having this amazing, fresh, incredibly great value wine actually yes. compared to other regions in the world yes. in terms of the quality. So this very light, aromatic, salty, crisp, like the taste of spring, summer, and yes. the last bit of summer when you're moving into autumn, the thing that you want to drink. And then I think because everybody associates it with that, with the freshness, they don't really look beyond that. And it's a little bit like what happens with Provence Rosé, where everybody thinks it's something you should have when it's young.
Yes.
But actually, there's a lot of capacity to age because of the terroir,
yes.
the soil.
I would say that the majority of the wines, they are to drink very fast.
Yeah.
Actually, because some of those wines, they are fermented at lower temperatures, they have the fermentation flavors that won't last for a long time. Here, we have high fermentation temperatures, so yeah. we believe that a wine has not just to be something to smell, but to drink.
Yes.
So it has to last in the mouth. And that's for that reason, the wines also age in the bottle because these wines have high acidity, low pH, so have all the conditions to
yes.
age quite well if they are well made.
And I think something else to talk about as well, because obviously you are in an area where it is, you know, you're by the sea, it's humid, it's wet, everything. And I know, particularly just from my own experience of visiting Galicia, there aren't very many people that are working in a way where there's a respect to the environment. And when I walk through the vineyards today, I can see a lot of wildflowers, a lot of plant life. So that's very much of the ethos of what you're doing. And how much of that relates to your experience in teaching people about horticulture.
Yeah. Horticulture, yes.
Yeah.
No, yes, because I, in a certain way, this is my second life.
Yeah.
So I use part of the experience I had as a professor and research in horticulture. So what we want to do here is to use lots of rigor in everything we do, to precision, to do the things as they should be done. Because making wine is not a kind of a matter of good and bad luck. It's a matter of doing the things as they must be done. And also, everything starts in the vineyard with producing the grapes. So we have our vineyard certified as integrated production. So we use no fertilizers because we recycle the pruning wood and the leaves and we do not touch the soil.
Yeah.
So this is a kind of natural. And
and all the work's done by hand as well, right?
And of course, the grapes are picked by hand.
Yes.
So they are selected in the vineyard.
Yeah.
And this is why we say that our wines are made in the vineyard, not in the winery.
Yes.
The winery is just something very simple, as
yes.
you have seen, to keep the quality of the grapes. The inconvenience or the advantage, because for some people it's an inconvenience, for others it's an advantage, is that the wines are different from vintage to vintage.
Mm.
Because this is not a standard drink. As we said before, imagine that our vintage 21, 20, 20, 19 was all the same. What are you talking? We talking about? Yes. There isn't anything to discuss. So you may prefer this vintage, I prefer the other one. So they are all different, although they all have the same style. So they are siblings, but each one is different.
Mm.
And for us, this is the most interesting part of wine, because we don't want to produce a wine that is always the same. This is this is not Coca-Cola, this is wine.
I always use the example of semi-skimmed milk, because of it's something that should be an agricultural product that should show at least the what the animal's grazing on in the flavour of the milk. But unfortunately, it's something that you find throughout, like, at least I come from the UK, and it's like semi-skimmed milk, no matter where you buy it, it tastes the same. You just buy it because it says that. Yes. And I think there's often an approach about that with wine where we've lost the sense, and I mean, not just wine, but even food, even more so in many cases, we've lost that connection to the essence of where this comes from and the works behind it.
For us, this is very, very, very important.
Yeah.
Is to, because many times people ask me, oh, your wines, are they better, or are they, they compare with other produce? I just tell them they are different. They are produced in different conditions. Mm. It's a different terroir. So yes. If they were similar to the other wines, I was lying. Because I think that wine has a personality, should reflect the conditions where it's produced.
I agree with you 100% on that.
Yeah. Otherwise, it will be a commodity.
Yeah.
So, and this is the way we work. People agree, others do not agree. But this is part. It's a part of life. But at least we want to have something that can be explained, that people understand. And when they are tasting one of our wines, they could relate to the conditions where they are produced.
Yeah, and going on to that, I think that could be, before we're going to talk about three wines of yours today. Yes. But before that, I think for the people who are a little bit nerdier, or maybe for the wine professionals that listen to the podcast that might be interested, maybe it'd be good just to touch on what's specific about where we are in the larger region. So the smaller zone we're in.
We are in the northwest of Portugal.
Yes.
So, and for many people, Portugal is Mediterranean. No Mediterranean in this area.
This is Atlantic.
This is Atlantic.
Right?
This is 100% Atlantic.
Yeah.
So, and especially in summer, if you want to go onto the beach.
Is any of Portugal actually Mediterranean?
Oh yes, the south.
The Algarve? But it's still like
it's on the Atlantic because it's west of Gibraltar, but the climate is
Mediterranean.
Mediterranean. Okay. But here is Atlantic. Yeah. And if you want to understand our wines, you should come to Porto. Porto is like San Francisco in California. Foggy, windy, cool in summer.
Yeah.
If you have the courage to go onto the beach and you need a double courage to swim because the water temperature sometimes is 15, 16.
Pretty chilly.
Chilly, yes. Chilly. So in summer, we get this influence from the Atlantic.
Mm.
So it's a cool summer which induces wines that have high acidity and a good flavor, because these are what the experts say, cool weather climate.
Mm.
And the soil is granite, pure granite. So it's this combination with the granite soil and the Atlantic influence that produces our wines, the Vinho Verde, or the Vinho Regional do Minho.
Yeah. And I think, so in one little thing as well, as we talked a little bit about Vinho Verde as a region, And obviously there are many sub-zones. Is there 9? I think it's 9 or 11.
Oh, yes.
Something like that. And they all have different nuances, right? So different varietals. But we talked a little bit about...
No, this is not politically correct.
Okay. I like this.
So don't record. This is off record.
Well, we won't. Let's just not say it. We'll have that.
No, the thing is that these different regions or sub-regions doesn't have much to do with the different styles of wine, with the exception of the northeast, the Alvarinho, and then in the southeast, because the these regions come from north to south, so and all include the proximity to the sea and the mainland.
Okay.
And what is important is when you travel from the coast to the mountains is like an amphitheater.
Mm-hmm.
It's going up.
Yes.
And it's going more continental.
Yes.
So the more you go inside, there is a certain
amplification.
You also are close to the Douro Valley.
Yes.
That in summer is an oven.
Yes. Exactly.
So in this region, what is important is if you have a wine close to the sea or more in the countryside.
And then that will dictate the style.
Yes, that dictates the styles. We are in midterm.
Okay.
Because it's 30 kilometers away from the sea, so we get a lot of sea influence. But already a little bit better than to be on the coast with the fog and
less disease pressure than if
you pressure. Yes.
Yeah. Thank you for going into that, because I know it's like it's. I'm sure you have to repeat that all the time, so I'm really grateful.
Oh no, it's a pleasure.
And are you happy with all of that being in the recording?
Oh yes.
Okay, cool. Because when you're like don't recall, I'm like, oh, I don't know whether that's cool.
Well, no, because when I mentioned off record, it's to be recorded.
So, I like that. So it's off record, but it's on off record.
But it's on record.
Okay, cool. I just wanted to get that on the recordings.
Oh, no, no, like, when I like, say it's off record, no, I mean that you should record that. So it's not according to the official policy.
Okay.
Okay.
So. Oh, I see what you mean. Just checking. Okay. Just checking.
Okay.
Consent is an important thing.
Yes.
So let's move on to your wine. So I've just, before we started recording, I poured myself a little mini glass of the 2021 Quinta do Amizio Vigna Verde.
Yes.
Day? Verde?
Yes.
We've been talking about that. You can say Verde or you can say Verde.
2020, we have tested also the 2021, and it's all what we call classic Vigno Verde, with a slightly difference from the majority of the Vigno Verdes, because we think that a wine is not to smell, it's to drink.
Mm.
So we need the good presence in mouth, length. And this is a wine, then when you taste and you put it in the mouth, you feel the same.
Yeah.
And this is important because makes the wine an easy drinking wine. And probably all our wines, they are different in style, but they are all wines that they have a good length in the mouth, good acidity, and especially particularly this one, this Vigno Verde, is what we call an easy drinking wine. Very dangerous, because when you open the bottle and start drinking it, it's something that you don't get tired.
Yes.
So, and you continue to drink it because it's fresh, it's particularly very good for the afternoon with a snack and...
I mean, I told you earlier on today when we were in the cellar that Arlene and I, Arlene's my business partner, we're both founders of Sublime Wine. We had a dinner party and there were six of us and we thought six bottles of Vigno Verde would get us through, and we were barely through main course and we ran out of it because it was like water. It was so thirst quenching and just delicious. And that's what I love about it, because, and I mean, maybe because as well I live in Germany, it's kind of a better alternative to a lot of Riesling, because it's just like, there's a saltiness to it, it's dry, it's got high acidity, it's still fruity and aromatic, but at the same time it's not overwhelming, so there's a lovely lightness and fruitiness, like it's just, yes. It's and integrity to it, there's integrity to it, like what you said is, it's not a wine that just disappears immediately.
No, it stays in your mouth, yes. And what you smell is what you get in your mouth.
Yes.
And this is important for all our wines, particularly because they are not fermented at very low temperature.
Yes.
We ferment it at relatively high temperatures for white wine, just to have this length in the mouth and this structure of the wines.
I would add one thing that's important for people that do try the wine, especially when it's newly bottled. It is bottled with a little bit of CO2, so there's a tiny spritz,
yes,
but also bottled with a very low level of sulfur. So
yes, very low level of sulfur, so you can drink it. You don't get a headache.
Depends how much you drink.
Oh, even if you drink two or three bottles.
Okay, so you're drinking your fourth bottle, do you get a headache? Maybe.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so we've tried that amazing wine I love, and I personally think it's the wine of the summer, this summer, and every summer. But we're going to go on to the Alvarinho Lorego.
Yes.
Which vintage are we going to try?
I would go to the
19. So to all of our listeners, we have around 12 bottles in front of us.
Yes, so it's a hard job.
And we're just pouring the 2019 Alvarinho
Lorego. So, and as you see for the shape of the bottle, it's a different style of wine.
So this bottle, for those of you that are on audio, as many of our listeners are on audio, the Vigne Verde is in like a Riesling-shaped bottle, and the Alvarinho Lorego, and the next wine that we'll also try is in a Burgundy-shaped bottle, so the one with the kind of wider base and the sloping shoulders.
Yes. Because we think it's a different style of wine,
yes.
So it continues to have a good acidity, but it's a more body, more structure.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a wine that goes well with a meal. Especially goes very well with cheese, even with a cooked meal with meat, because it has some structure and acidity. This 19 is a wine that, for me, it's better now that it was 1 year ago, because it has some evolution, some more developed the bouquet, keeps the acidity. But it's now at the peak to be drunk. We will have other wines that could last longer. For me, the 19, it's now at the right stage to be drunk. And
I mean, what I love about that is it's still got that same line, and this is what I think is kind of a trademark of this region, is this lovely salty mineral line that you see, obviously from the soil and the climate. But you're right, those honey, peachy,
a little bit
almost
honey,
almond,
yes.
Sweet almond note, yes. in a really lovely way.
And
white
what
flowers.
What you feel in your nose is what you get in your mouth. So it continues all the same. Especially it increases a little bit at the end. So it's what I think makes this pleasant wine to drink.
Mm. It's a yummy wine.
Yeah.
Really yummy.
Yes. The only thing missing is something to eat, because this is a wine that goes very well during the meal.
Yes.
Needs food.
We're going for lunch soon.
Oh,
though,
yeah, yes.
Sorry to everyone that's listening that's like, that mineral, delicious, nutty, almond, honey, peachy wine.
Yeah.
Yeah, very nice. And I think this is something I really appreciated in our tasting. So we did some little mini verticals today. So we got to try this wine in four different vintages. And it was so interesting because for me, seeing the evolution, seeing the vintage differences, like some of the wines were a bit older, were showing even fresher than some of the younger wines. So you could see that, you could really see that vintage variation, that it wasn't just like none of these wines are homogenous products. And I also think just seeing it after a couple of years in bottle, like having that little bit of time for the wine to really settle into itself and for the character of the wine to really come out. Because like you said, of course, there's a kind of global trend of people wanting to drink these really light, fresh, crisp wines. But there's so much beyond that when the wine's made well.
Yes, so that often missing gets the missed. Best part of it.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Although I realize that most of the people will drink these wines very young, but I usually say at least wait 1 year. For instance, the 2021 will be ready for drinking in October. At least 1 year to get some complexity, and because before it's just the fruit.
Yes.
And the fruit is interesting. It is pleasant. We have also tasted the 21 from the vet. Lots of fruit, but it's just fruit. It's pleasant as a young wine. But for me, these wines are much more complex. It's even the length in the mouth, and it's slightly different. And it depends on the preference of the people. I know that people, white wine's very young, but others, they learn how to enjoy a white wine with a little bit of evolution in the bottle, more complex.
Yes.
And it's my preference, but I will accept other preferences and people that prefer the young wines.
On that note, should we move to the next wine? So we're going to try the Alvarinho.
Single Alvarinho.
And which vintage were we going to try? Was it the 15 or the 16?
I'll go for the 15.
The 15?
Yes.
How exciting.
Okay, just...
So, 2015, Quinto Domizio, Alvarinho.
Alvarinho, yes.
And just for our viewers, just to really reiterate that, Alvarinho is the Portuguese name for the same grape that's known in Spanish as Alvarinho.
So exactly the same. Exactly the same. We use the same clones. Yes. That is the same variety for centuries. And this is a single Alvarinho. And I still remember that 2015 was a difficult year, because these grapes were finished to harvest on Friday, and on Saturday rain started, and was raining cats and dogs, very heavy
cats
rain.
Cats and dogs.
Yes. So these grapes were picked just before the rain, and at the beginning it was a difficult wine because the flavor was not very intense.
Yeah.
And difficult to drink. But then with the evolution, with the aging in bottle, starts to develop complex aromas, still keeps a high acidity. Mm-hmm. And it's a wine that, for me, it's the best example of a slow drinking wine. Take the time.
Mm.
Let it breathe.
Yeah.
Let it develop.
Yes.
And see how to enjoy a relatively old wine.
Mm.
This is not a wine that you open the bottle, pour the wine into the glass and drink it. No, it's too close. You have to wait even... We tasted it just half an hour before, but now it's already different.
Exactly. And I mean, I was just thinking that, and we've tasted it, we've gone back to it. There's a little bit more temperature to the wine, which is also nice. I like that it's a slightly warmer temperature.
Yes, it's warmer. Wines, they should never be drunk below 10 degrees. 12 or even 13, Because if it's too cold, you don't you really don't feel anything.
Yeah, you lose the flavor.
Let's the wine to breathe in the glass to warm a little bit. Not ice cold.
Which we're told we should have wine ice cold. And I think probably when you're used to drinking industrial wine, you need it to be ice cold because it tastes so bad. But that's me being slightly controversial and, and slightly political. But that's really what I think. And
look, Emily, I still remember. It was just a few years ago. I was at a restaurant sitting nearby another customer. And he ordered a glass of dry white wine. And they bring a glass from the fridge, cold glass. The wine was really very chilly, very cold. Put into the glass, smell it, drink it. Oh, very good. But you couldn't taste anything because it was
frozen.
Not like ice. It could be a white or a wine, it could be beer or water, because the taste would be exactly the same. Yes. Something, it was a cold drink.
Yes.
And this is not a cold drink, this is wine, and wine deserves our
attention.
Attention and respect.
Yeah, I agree. Cheers to that. I mean, like, that's...
Okay,
yeah, cheers to that. I just want to say thank you to you for taking time to
record for Juice,
and like also for hosting me here anyway. But yeah, it's been really good because obviously we've had a virtual correspondence for a long time throughout the pandemic.
Yes, yes.
So it's so good to be together in person, and I'm so excited to continue to be a part of seeing the evolution of all these wines that you're making. So
thank you for coming. And it's also my pleasure to talk about wine. I keep talking all the afternoon because this is always an interesting conversation, because especially when we do not agree with a certain vintage and you think, oh, I prefer this one, you prefer that one. That's when the interesting conversation starts.
Yeah, a little bit of push and pull in a way.
Unanimously. Unanimity is not a good thing.
No, I think, well, healthy discourse in any industry and in any space and in any conversation is only a good thing, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because that means there's space to learn and there's space to have better understanding with each other. But, cheers.
Cheers.
For everybody who is tuning in, you can find Juice Podcast. We're on Instagram at juice.podcast, on Twitter, which we don't really use, which is juice_podcast. Obviously, my co-host Gwen is not here today, but you'll find her on her own account, which is Gwen Douglas. And I'm under Vina Lupa, is my personal Instagram. And to find some of the wines that we talked about, Sublime Wine Berlin. On behalf of Juice, thank you very much, Antonio.
Okay,
and
thank you for coming.
Cheers again.
Okay. And cheers to you.
Cheers.